When one state sells something that a neighboring state does not, it makes sense that people will cross the state line to buy that product. Look at Washington State and the way people from Oregon will go there to buy firecrackers and other fireworks illegal in Oregon. Now to the more obvious example, marijuana. It was legal for personal recreational use in Washington first, and people did drive across the state line from Oregon to buy it. That is, until Oregon legalized it for personal use as well. A University of Oregon professor is part of a team that researched the trends for cross-state marijuana movements. That would be Ben Hansen, who studies risk-related behaviors that touch on topics like marijuana use and driving, alcohol use, and much more. He's done this study with a couple of other professors on pot sales in the West. Ben Hansen is the W.E. Minor Chair in Economics at the University of Oregon. He's been there since 2010. He's also a faculty research fellow for the National Bureau of Economic Research and a fellow at the Institute for the Study of Labor. So he took a look at what happened when people drive across state lines to buy marijuana. And in the case of Washington State, since it had legal pot first, people were driving into Washington State to buy marijuana there. Oregon did not have legal marijuana other than for medical use at that time. Once Oregon legalized marijuana sales for personal and recreational use, then people stopped driving across the state line to buy it in Washington once it got legalized here. So that's what Ben Hansen's been researching. He also looks at issues like whether impaired driving has continued as there has been more purchasing of marijuana for personal use in the states where it is legal at the moment. Trying to raise Ben Hansen on the phone. He is, again, the W.E. Minor Chair in Economics at the University of Oregon. Been there since 2010. Also faculty fellow at the National Bureau of Economics Research. Fellow of the Institute of the Study for Labor. Ben Hansen, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange today.
Thank you for having me today.
It sounds like a fascinating and potentially bottomless field of research in risky behaviors.
Yeah, certainly there's a lot of things that I guess people want to do that on the surface we might think, why? But we see it everywhere in society, and so I'm just trying to understand those types of behaviors from an economics perspective.
Why economics? I mean, this seems like more of a psychology thing, but what's the impulse to find it for economic purposes?
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, when I come back to thinking about what is economics, it all comes back to what is scarce. And if we think about, you know, behaviors related to drug abuse, alcohol abuse, it's like, well, they still have scarce resources that they're using to make decisions. There's a lot of scarcity in terms of how do we allocate government resources to try to combat these problems. There's scarcity involved when it comes to drug alcohol abuse centers. So I think wherever there's scarcity involved, wherever there's choices involved, economics has something to weigh in on the matter. And one of the things that I think economics has really contributed to from a social science perspective is the ability to use naturally occurring experiments to learn about the effects that public policies can have. And that's certainly something that I've been focusing on in my research.
All right. So really is an allocation of resources we're talking about here, which is all economics. Let's start with the most recent publication, A Chance to Look at People Buying Recreational Marijuana Out of State. Nice of Washington and Oregon to make this study easy for you.
Yeah. So both those things were somewhat fortuitous in the sense that Washington has the best administrative data tracking the availability and the purchases of recreational marijuana through their traceability system. A lot of other states are kind of playing catch-up, sometimes launching more quickly and then introducing those tracing systems afterwards. And then, of course, Oregon legalized marijuana. And then after, of course, the ballot initiative that legalized it, there was so much public pressure to make marijuana available that there was kind of this rush. And so they quickly converted all of the medical dispensaries to recreational ones prior to the instead of the initial licensing thing they had in mind. So those two things kind of collided together to give us, you know, the perfect scenario to really answer this question of how extensive the interstate transport of recreational marijuana could be.
And what did you find both before and after Oregon legalized?
So what we found was in the period leading up to marijuana legalization in Oregon, that if you looked at kind of the border counties in both Idaho and Oregon, that there was a disproportionate amount of marijuana being sold in those counties relative to their populations. So if you think of kind of like what fraction of the marijuana is sold in the state versus what fraction of the population in Washington exists, in all those border counties, both in Oregon and in along the Oregon border and along the Idaho border, in Washington, there was this what could look like either people in these border counties really, really like marijuana, or perhaps people are crossing over to the border and buying it. And then we found after Oregon legalized its marijuana, within about 3 days, the amount of marijuana being sold at the retail establishments in Washington fell by about 41%.
Wow.
And that's something that we found that was unique to the Oregon-Washington border along Washington. We didn't find any change along the Idaho-Washington border. We didn't find any changes along the Canadian-Washington border either. So this was something that was very specific to Oregon and Washington's border.
And you think simply because Oregon still had it legal?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that seems to be the thing that would be most consistent with everything that we're seeing with the data.
I want to be careful about extrapolating this elsewhere. Are there things that potentially make Washington's experience unique?
Well, I mean, if you were to think what makes kind of the Washington order or Oregon border unique, it is unique in the sense that we have a bunch of bridges there. There's the Columbia River Gorge that divides the two states, and so there's only a limited number of crossings. And so that kind of bottlenecks everything through when people want to cross over into the border. So in some ways, that might mean that the effects could be even larger in other jurisdictions. The other thing that also could be specific to Oregon and Washington is that marijuana was already pretty readily available in Oregon beforehand. Certainly, medical marijuana had been available in Oregon since 1988. Licensed medical dispensaries had been around since 2013, and there was hundreds of them already operating in Oregon. And it had already been legalized on the demand side earlier in the year, and people were able to grow their own marijuana. So what we're really in some ways talking about here is that people prefer the ability to go into a retail establishment at their own leisure and purchase marijuana. And the thing that's a little bit, if you will, surprising from an economics perspective is that this is potentially a much larger crime than if they had gone and sought out the traditional black market, you know, going and finding their local neighborhood drug dealer and purchasing some marijuana. If anything, I don't even know if that's a misdemeanor anymore in Oregon. It certainly is from the point of the drug dealer because they aren't a licensed retailer. But from the person purchasing marijuana from them, it might not even be a crime at all. Yet crossing over into the border in Washington and purchasing marijuana and then bringing it across the border, that risks a felony because it involves the interstate transfer of a drug that's Schedule I on from the federal government's perspective. And so that says something about how salient these types of crimes could be to individuals.
Ben Hansen is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, economics professor at the University of Oregon. We're talking about things he's discovered with fellow researchers about cross-border movement of marijuana between Washington and Oregon, pre- and post-Oregon legalization. You can join us at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Ben's our guest on this month's edition of Curious, where research meets radio, an ongoing set of interviews with the University of Oregon faculty. So I mean, obviously, you mentioned this is a felony at a federal level because then you're crossing state lines, so it becomes federal jurisdiction. A lot being said about the fact that the current attorney general and president do want to crack down further on marijuana, where President Obama just looked the other way with the state laws going on. Is there anything to read into this about how much marijuana is grown in a state just for that state? I mean, do you have a sense from this how much marijuana does move out of any state?
Yeah, I mean, so my glass half full version of this, because I'm an optimist, is that we calculated the total amount of marijuana that was being sold in Washington versus the amount that we saw being reduced in these border counties. And then with that, we were able to, if we assume a similar amount of diversion was happening along the Idaho border, we calculated that at most about 12% of the marijuana grown in Washington was leaving the state afterwards, before Oregon's legalization. And after Oregon's legalization, this would have fallen down to 7%. So this suggests that by far and away, the majority of the marijuana grown in Washington is actually staying in the state. It also suggests that the more states are available that adopt these types of recreational marijuana laws, the easier it makes states to actually abide by, you were talking about federal guidelines, what's broadly become known as the Cole Memo, which dates back to when President Obama was in office. The Deputy Attorney General wrote a memo that became known as the Cole Memo that basically said that the federal government's going to deprioritize enforcement of marijuana laws. And so states like California, they're going to be bordered by Oregon, which has recreational marijuana. They're going to be bordered by Nevada that has recreational marijuana, and Arizona, which has a very liberal medical marijuana establishment and almost recreationally legalized. So out of California, we probably should not expect a lot of the marijuana that will eventually be grown in that state, which will probably become the dominant marijuana player in the country. Not a lot of it's probably going to be diverted out of the state just due to kind of that buffer zone that those other states provide.
But I wonder, though, I mean, we're talking supply and demand here, and if you can make money on the product, you will make as much of it as you can, I would think. And as you look anecdotally around places like the Rogue Valley, for example, with big fences going up everywhere for people to do outdoor grows, it seems like there's a big market growing and some doubts, certainly in my mind, about the ability of Oregon to absorb all the marijuana being grown.
Yeah, well, I mean, as that supply of marijuana grows, that's just going to drive the recreational prices lower. And eventually, as those recreational prices fall, that's going to serve to push out those black markets, to push out the violence and the systemic crime associated with the illegal distribution of marijuana. So as much of a cultural change as it can be to have marijuana be legalized to see these big outdoor grows, that's the thing that's ultimately going to drive the black market out of existence.
So downward pressure on prices is the big thing.
Yes.
Not a crackdown from people with police tactics and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, and something else that we found is we calculated the exact amount that we thought was being shipped out of state. As I mentioned, we thought it was about 7% of the marijuana sold in Washington. And when we added that all up, what we found is that in some recent large drug busts that happened, for instance, in Colorado and in Washington, that they were getting as much marijuana out of that one drug bust as likely legally left the state through these individual purchases over a six-month period. So traditional police work and drug busts are probably a more effective way than trying to prevent all of this interstate transport of marijuana that is just due to people cross-border shopping. And we also estimate, we found the average daily traffic flows from the Oregon Department of Transportation between Washington and Oregon, and we estimated there how likely the police would be to uncover somebody with recreational marijuana if they just do a randomized road stop. We found that at most, they would have found somebody with marijuana in 0.4% of randomized stops.
All right, Ben
Hansen.
That
means they'd have to stop about 200 people to find one person with marijuana in their car.